we subjectively experienced the sense of Avadim Hayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim. We felt a sense of something very confining, very stuck. This Pesach experienced a different kind of Seder, one that is more personal and relatable in a transformative way. In this episode, I want to try and show you how to bring the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of Exodus from Egypt, to your life, to your inner life. I'm very excited to share this episode with you and show you how to do that. This episode is sponsored by Chaim Younger in honor of Daniel Goffman, in recognition and appreciation of all the holy fires that he has lit to inspire growth in our relationship with Hashem. Relationships are too important and too challenging to take for granted. Welcome to The Attached Life, where we explore the magic and the madness of our most meaningful relationships. I've always heard that if you cut open a tree, you see rings on the inside that tell you something about how old the tree is. But I've never really thought about it deeply until recently, when a client pointed out to me that this is the perfect metaphor for the concept of parts of self that we talk about. And actually, a pasuk in the Torah, verse in the Torah tells us, Adam eitz hasad, that a person is likened to a tree. And the idea is that if you cut open the tree and you see the rings on the inside, the rings evolve in concentric circles. And the innermost ring, the innermost circle, is the youngest part of the tree, and it continues to develop more rings as time goes on. But I looked into this a little further, and what it seems like is that there's actually more than just the age, but actually the pattern of the ring and the way that the ring forms and the way that it looks actually tells a story. It's shaped and developed, particularly in regard to the weather and the environment and different occurrences that happened during that year. And so different rings of the tree will look different because something else happened in that year of the tree's life. And the same thing is true about each of us. We live as our most current self. But inside of us, we contain many rings, many layers, many parts of self, each part of self carrying a different story, a different experience of what the weather was like back then, what the environment was like, what the relationships were, what the experiences were during that year of our life. And oftentimes, the experiences we have now in our current lives, when we feel that we've hit a wall, when there's something in our life that just isn't going, that isn't working the way we want it to, that we know in some part of ourselves we'd like to make a certain change, or we'd like to accomplish something, we'd like to be a certain way, and we know that we're capable of doing it. We know it's a value of ours, we know that it's a goal of ours, and we know that we have the capacity for it, but for some reason we just can't seem to get it done. We can't seem to enter into that lifestyle, into making that thing that we've tried so many times to make it real and to make it happen. And we often struggle to figure out why, what's going on, why can't I just get this done? I know it's possible, I know that I can, and I know that I want to. Why is it not moving? Why does it feel so stuck? And oftentimes what's really happening here is that it's my adult self, it's my current self, it's the outermost layer of the tree that knows that I want to do this and knows that I can do this. But there is a ring deeper inside, there's a layer, a part of self, a younger part of self, deeper inside that may not know this current reality, that may not know what my life now looks like, that might not know what I'm actually capable of now, or what I value now, or what my new life circumstance is now. And that earlier part needs help, needs to be updated. And the reason that we're finding ourselves so stuck is because there's almost a battle, an unconscious struggle between one part of self that wants to change and another part of self that actually is either scared of change, doesn't value the change, or doesn't believe that this change is possible. Just as an example, imagine someone who knows that they need to take more ownership in their work. They need to be more assertive. They need to take a sense of responsibility that this is mine, that I can do this. And they just can't seem to do it. They know they want to, they know they can, and they even believe that they would be successful. But they just can't seem to make it happen. It could be that this is because one of the older rings, for some reason, has a defense up, a safety precaution around taking ownership of something. perhaps this self grew up in an environment with a very scary, overbearing, critical type of parent or whoever it may have been that made it very dangerous to take ownership of something, because then if I take ownership of this, I will get a lot of backlash. I will, if I really step into this, if I really engage in this way, all sorts of things that feel very scary might happen. And so I kind of have a safety precaution aversion to taking anything as my responsibility, making anything mine. And so now I so badly want to be able to do that, but yet there's a younger part of me that so badly does not want to do that, wants to stay safe not doing that. Take another example, someone who wants to be more open and more honest, more emotionally connected with a spouse. They want to be more loving, more soft, more sweet. They know they want to do this. They know it will be well received. They even know the right words to say. They've done all the communication, therapy training, all this good stuff. But they just hit a wall every time they try. There's almost this kind of paralysis that sets in. And this, again, could be because there's an earlier ring in their story. There's an earlier, younger part of self that felt very mocked early on, felt very uncomfortable, very criticized, very awkward whenever they would try to engage in any sort of emotional conversation or communication within their family of origin, where that was not the norm, that wasn't the culture or the environment, and actually it was met with kind of a mocking response. These kinds of situations, and there are so many, many examples of this exact phenomenon, these kinds of situations that so many of us face is exactly what the Seder is about. It's what the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is about, telling the story of our exodus from Egypt. Because the mitzvah, or one of the aspects of the mitzvah of that night, of the Seder night, is from the pasuk v'higadeta levincha, of telling the story of leaving Mitzrayim to your child. But the halacha is, the law tells us, that if you don't have a child to tell it to, you could tell it to a spouse. If you don't have a spouse, you could tell it to someone else. If you don't have anyone with you, if you're alone, you can still fulfill this mitzvah, fulfill this commandment by telling the story to yourself. But you still need to tell the story to yourself. Who are you telling the story to, and how do you fulfill the verse that says to tell it to a child if you're not actually telling it to a child? So it's explained in many different sources that Mitzrayim is not strictly Egypt. It's not strictly a geographical place. And leaving Mitzrayim is not strictly a historical event. But Mitzrayim is Mitzrayim, is constrictions, narrowness, confinement. It's the places that we were avadim hayinu. We were slaves. We felt a sense of bondage. We were stuck somewhere. We were held back by something. We felt a sense that there was a paro in our life, someone who was dictating over us, someone or something. Maybe not someone as bad as paro, maybe not someone with any bad intentions, but there was a way in which we subjectively experienced the sense of avadim hayinu leparo b'mitzrayim. We felt a sense of something that felt very confining, very stuck. And the mitzvah that we engage in at the Seder is to first of all recognize that we even call it a Seder, that there's order. We'll get back to that in a moment, but the mitzvah is v'higadeta levincha, is to tell the story of leaving Mitzrayim, of how we got out of that confinement, out of that narrowness, to tell that story of getting out, levincha, to your child. And the child, in addition to an actual child, or in addition to an actual person, someone else sitting with you while you that you tell the story to, the child may also refer to the inner child, the inner ring in the tree that still might experience itself, himself, or herself as being in that original condition, in that original situation. The part of self that may not have had the update yet, that we actually left, that we actually got out, that we're not there anymore. And so there's a part of me that may as a 20-year-old or 40-year-old or 60-year-old or 80-year-old still be responding to the way that I felt I was being treated when I was two? Perhaps I grew up with a very controlling environment, and I felt that I needed to respond to that controlling environment by being the most relaxed and anti-being controlled person in the world, and I needed to act out and find my freedom and do things that would objectively be seen as crazy, but I needed to do them to get my freedom, to get my free air, my airspace. And now, however many years later, and I'm not in that environment at all anymore, and I'm living my own life with my own decisions, my own circumstance, and I'm not being controlled anymore, but I still just impulsively feel the need to do these things that I know aren't even good for me, but I need to do whatever it is to feel that I have a sense of airspace, that I have freedom, when the reality is that I actually already have freedom, real freedom. But that younger two-year-old part of me, the original ring in the tree, or one of the original rings in the tree, might not know about the new situation. There is a metaphor given in the world of AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, about a man who's stuck in a desert or a deserted island of some sort. This wouldn't really make sense in a desert, so let's go with a deserted island. And he's wandering kind of in this jungle, and it's days, and he's completely alone, and he has no food left and no resources, and he can't find anyone or any life, and he really feels that he's at the end, and he can't think of anything to do. And all of a sudden, he hears the sound of running water, and he follows the sound, and he sees a big river. And he sees that on the other side of the river, there's a whole new area of unexplored territory that he has not yet ventured into. And he thinks, well, maybe there's people there. Maybe there's life. Maybe I can find resources or possibilities. And I can find a way out. But I need to get across the river. But the river is deep and the river is wide and it's a raging current and he can't get across. So he figures, let me build a raft. And if I build a raft, maybe I can get across. But he builds a raft out of all sorts of... It's a makeshift raft. He doesn't have a store to go to, of course, and he just puts together whatever scraps and things he can find, and he builds a raft, and he thinks to himself, well, I have no idea if this is going to work, but I have no better option anyway, so let me give it a try. So he gets in the raft, and he goes across the water, and he makes it to the other side. And now he has a whole new territory in front of him, a new landscape that he can explore to find possibility and hope. And as he starts walking, he's carrying this raft with him. It's a very bulky and junky raft. Doesn't have a nice, neat way to package it up and tuck it away, but he's carrying it with him everywhere, and it's slowing him down. But he's holding on to it for dear life because this raft is what saved his life and gave him new hope and new possibility. He doesn't want to let go of it because maybe I'm going to need it again, he thinks to himself. What he doesn't realize is that each chapter of the journey is a new situation, a new set of circumstances, a new update to have. Many times we carry rafts that at one point in our journey, in one chapter of our life, these rafts were incredibly helpful. They may have been life-saving. They may have provided a sense of safety using imagination when in a difficult circumstance to just dissociate into a fairy tale world where I could just dissociate from the pain around me. But then later on in life, I'm still dissociating when there's actually no danger in front of me. But I'm still holding that raft. I'm still having a very hard time focusing on anything in front of me because my younger self is holding on for dear life to that raft because it provided so much safety. Vihigadeta levincha means to go back to that child. My grandmother is a professor of Hebrew language, and she points out an amazing insight that the word vihigadeta, Hebrew words in Hebrew have three-letter roots, what's called a shoresh. So every word can be broken down into its core essence, which is three letters. The root of the word is three letters. So what's the shoresh? What's the three-letter root of the word lehagid, to tell, or vihigadeta? Levincha. What's the three-letter root? So it's tricky. Most people don't know this. It's actually the letters Nun, Gimel, Dalet, which means Neged. which is neged, which means to face. In its essence, it doesn't mean to tell. It means to face. Vihigadata levincha means to face the child. And in the way that we're reading it, it means to face the inner child, to see him or her, to pay attention to him or her. Now, there is a story to tell. Vihigadata means to face. It means to tell in a way of facing, not tell in a way of preaching, not to tell the story in a way of dictating or overpowering or teaching in a kind of condescending or self-righteous or authoritative hierarchical way. Instead, the insight that emerges from my grandmother's point is that Vihigadata is a specific type of telling. It's a type of telling that engages a facing, a seeing, a paying attention to. Like Rabbi Nachman's tale of the turkey prince. It's going down on the floor under the table and meeting the child part where he or her is at. It's getting down to that level, going back in time to be there with that younger self in the predicament, in the challenge that he or she was in. Avadim hayinu is in plural. Perhaps one reading of it is that now I'm going to go into that experience you had. I'm going to be there with you. You're not going to be alone, because the biggest pain of any pain is the loneliness of it. It's not even the pain itself. So now I'm going to see you. Now I'm going to accompany you in that experience. I'm going to be with you in that experience. And that's why the telling of the story doesn't just include telling our exodus, our getting out of Mitzrayim. We don't go straight to the miracles and the makos and the leaving. But instead, the halacha is maschil begnosu mesayim b'shvach. We start with the difficulty, and then we get to the salvation. And if a person skips straight to the salvation, they do not fulfill this mitzvah, at least for sure not in its fullest. The mitzvah is specifically to start with the difficulty. Because what we're doing is we're facing that inner child. We're giving them attention. We're seeing their plight. We're seeing what they're going through. And we're going to be in it with them. We're going to face them. And we're going to start with the difficulty. There's a mitzvah on this night to eat maror, to eat something bitter. And according to many, actually, if you eat that maror with just swallowing it, bala maror, if someone just swallows maror, they just swallow it without tasting it, they don't fulfill the mitzvah. You need to taste the bitterness, because you need to go through that with the child. And then the update. Once we're there with them, once we're in it with them, once we're on the floor with them, we're facing them, we're in a place of hayinu, we're together. Now we can come out of that together, slowly, one step at a time. We tell the story and we go through it and we create the update. We start to try to the best of our ability to update the child, to show them that things are different now, that things are not the same, that you're not living with that paro in your life anymore, that you're not living with that mitzrayim in your life anymore. That even though there might be new mitzrayim, because there's always challenges and constrictions, it's a different version, it's a different situation, and your resources now, your capacities, your relationships, your circumstances are different now than they were back then. And we create a relationship between our adult self and our younger child self. But in doing that, one of the most important things is questions. The whole night is a night of questions. We ask, we allow the child, we invite the child to ask questions, to say the difficult things, because we invite them to be present, to show us what they're experiencing. Because the only way we can update them is if they first feel understood by us. When we just try to make the change so quickly and the younger part doesn't feel understood, then the younger part feels unsafe once again and has to hold on even tighter to whatever that raft was. They can only start to let go of the raft. They can only start to engage the possibility of an update if they feel that you understand why they're holding on to the raft so tightly to begin with. So we have to first be neged. We have to first be hayinu in plural. We have to first taste the maror with them. We have to first start with the genus, with the avadim hayinu leparo mitzrayim. We have to go back even further. We have to go back to lava, to arami oved avi, to the earliest challenges and pains that we experienced. And we have to give that its time and its place and move slowly and allow that to be. And then when we do that, we can start to make updates. And it's so interesting how the updates happen in the Haggadah. Because the Baal Haggadah doesn't tell a simple linear story of just one kind of sequential change. Where we were first slaves, we were first in a constriction, in bondage, and then we got out and now we're clear and good. That's not at all how it goes. Instead, we start as slaves and then we go to freedom, but then we go back to telling a story even earlier of a different aspect of our slavery, and then we go to freedom, and then we tell another aspect, and we keep doing this back and forth. Because that, too, is the reality of our lives. That is the journey. That is the story. The story is that it's not neat. It's not clear. It's not linear. It's not binary, either slavery or freedom. It's not something that you can just close up, put it in a box, tie it up in a bow, and put it away, and now it's done. Not at all. The pain lives on. The challenge is real. The challenge ebbs and flows. It comes and goes. There's aspects in which it's resolved, but then it comes back in a new way, and then it's resolved again, and it comes back from another angle. And then we find a new resource, but then it shows up again in a different way. And that's how we tell the story of the Haggadah of Mitzrayim. It's not just a linear Masal Gnosim Asayim B'Shvach, where you have a binary of these two categories. You start in slavery and you end in freedom. Not at all. Instead, there's a constant dialectical experience, a constant moving back and forth. Because we want to give that acknowledgement of the raw reality of human experience, of the challenges of all those rings on the inside of the tree. This is also why the different things at the Seder oftentimes are confusing. Well, is this an aspect of freedom or is this an aspect of slavery? The matzah. The matzah is a poor man's bread, but the matzah is also the bread that we have of getting out. Which one is it? And the answer is that it's both. Because our experiences are not so neatly packaged. The charoses, well, some point to it being, you know, the mortar of the bricks in some horrific way, and yet at the same time, it's also sweet. And the korech sandwich, it includes in theory, in its fullest, it includes the full geula. It has the korban pesach in it, but it's also with the maror, and it's also with the matzah. We go back and forth between leaning and not leaning. All these things are intertwined because the story of our lives is very complex and very nuanced. And when we engage it in that way, it allows for a lot more healing and a lot more growth. It allows the inner child to feel a lot more seen and understood. And that's when he or she is a bit more ready and willing to engage in the vulnerability of tsei ulamad, of stepping out. Tsei ulamad, growth, the learning can only happen with a tsei, with a leaving, with updating the system, but that's not simple. Any update requires a vulnerability. And we can only have that vulnerability when there's enough of a feeling of safety. And that safety comes from feeling seen and understood. And in particular, the story of the Haggadah, of course, is all through Yad Hashem. It's all through Hashem's plan, the Seder, the order that exists in that which seems disordered. And that Hashem has guided the whole thing all along. And that concept is a very powerful one. It's also a very delicate one. Because if we jump so quickly to just giving the answer of, well, this is what Hashem planned and it's all for the best, it doesn't have the real meaning, the real power, the real potency that it needs to have. There's a process of first tasting the maror, of first giving validity to the questions, to the pain, to the screams and the cries, to the Mitzrayim. And within that place, within that experience, each in our own way, to then be able to start to see that Hashem is with us in that, and that Hashem is guiding it, and that there's a purpose and there's a plan. And even if it doesn't feel that it's for the best, in some way it's for the right thing, however we exactly define that. And each person needs to discover that concept in his or her own way. When it becomes dogmatic, it loses any of its meaning and actually can just become a re-traumatization of whatever pain was experienced. Or it becomes a suppressing of emotion. But in some way, if we allow ourselves to go through the experience, the real human raw experience, that reality of Yad Hashem, of the hand of God, of the divine providence over everything and anything, over every single detail, that in the middle of the night we can tell a story of light, that we do this mitzvah specifically in the nighttime, because redemption is Laila Kayom Ya'ir, it's a night that shines as day, that even though the mitzvah Yigat Levincha Bayom Hahu Leimor, it's on that day, it's called a day even though it's night. Because when we can see Hashem's hand in everything, when we can look and find that in each particular experience there's a Yad Hashem, there's Hashem's divine perfect providence, that changes the entire story. And what that ultimately provides us with is what the Torah calls a rechush gadol, a great wealth. It's when we can turn post-traumatic stress into post-traumatic growth. It's when we can see that in our story, in our struggle, in our challenge, in our pain, there's a growth. There's something positive, something powerful that came out of it that doesn't negate or minimize or diminish the pain and the challenge. But specifically in the pain and the challenge, there's something precious, something invaluable. And it stays in this dialectical space. It stays in this complex, challenging way that it's not full redemption and it's not full pain. It's pain and redemption back and forth, or it is full pain and full redemption somehow at the same time. The story doesn't have a complete ending yet. And until the story has a complete ending, we don't have an ending. So it's not fully redeemed. We can't talk about anything with full redemption yet because we don't have full redemption. But there's a way in which on some level, there's a rechush gadol, even maso habonim haisel rosh pina, that the stone that started out as being completely discarded by the builders, that they didn't care about at all, they saw it as extra or garbage, somehow ended up becoming, and not just that they saw it as extra, but maso, they actually despised it, they didn't like it, it bothered them, but then ultimately somehow became the crowning jewel of the whole edifice, of the whole structure, of the whole building, became the most prized possession. That somehow our pain enlarges us, that somehow our difficulty enriches us, that something powerful emerges from within the darkness, that the night which is able to shine as day is even brighter than the day which already shined as day. And that's the ultimate Yitzias Mitzrayim, that's the ultimate transformation that we can achieve and we can feel, and that's the ultimate healing. And perhaps this is the real way, or one way of fulfilling that which we say in the Haggadah, Chayev Adam Liros Es Atzmo Ke'ilu Yatza MiMitzrayim, that a person needs to see themselves as if they left Mitzrayim. And in some text, it's Laharos Es Atzmo Ke'ilu Yatza Atam MiMitzrayim. You have to show yourself as if you left now from Mitzrayim. B'chol Dor V'Dor, right? It's B'chol Dor V'Dor Chayev Adam Liros Es Atzmo. That in every generation, a person has to see himself as leaving Mitzrayim. How do I see myself as leaving Mitzrayim? I've never been to Mitzrayim. I don't know what it's like. I don't know how to see myself as leaving Mitzrayim. But with this reading, the idea is no, literally in every generation, every person sees themselves as leaving Mitzrayim because there's an inner part of me. There's a child inside of me that was in Mitzrayim, that's been in Mitzrayim, that might still think he is in Mitzrayim. And the adult me, the present me, is able to help him achieve that Yitzias Mitzrayim by bringing him into contact with the Yad Hashem, with the Rechush Gadol, by giving him the update of the great treasure and the great wealth that has emerged from his experience. The child needs to be celebrated, needs to be given a standing ovation for the experiences that this child went through to get us to where we are now. so often those experiences are discarded or just kind of seen as we don't have to deal with that. But the rechush gadol that we have, the great wealth we have in our lives now in whatever way, only came because of the resilience of that child. And bringing that child into the Seder, celebrating them, allowing them to be there, inviting them to be there, wanting them to be there in whatever way they need to be. And to allow them to see what their work, their resilience has allowed us to become is a powerful experience. It's a different way of experiencing the Seder. To enter into the Seder with the awareness already in advance, if you have a moment, to think about, instead of only preparing good insights and vortlach and questions on the Seder and on the Haggadah, but to prepare for the Seder in a different way, to think about which part of myself, which inner ring in the tree, which earlier younger self is still holding on to a raft that's now weighing me down, but instead of looking at it with negativity, why are you still holding on to that? Stop holding on to that. I want to change. Instead of that, it's let me try and face him or her and understand that part of me and see them and allow them to ask questions and allow them to air their complaints and to voice their pain and allow them to be there and face them and be with them and go through that experience with them and then ultimately be able to provide them the update and to see what they've accomplished, to see what they've become, and to show them why now it might be okay to lower the raft a little bit or even put it down completely. And to allow them to see the rechush gadol, the great wealth, the great treasure that they now have, and to see the divine hand in all of it. To prepare that younger self, that awareness of the younger self in advance of the Seder, and to enter into that night with the intention and the consciousness that this night shines a unique possibility into our lives and into our souls and into our bodies, penetrating all the way to these younger selves to bring them out of their Mitzrayim. My suggestion would be to pick just one at a time, starting with one part of self, and invite him or her into this profound and moving experience that can truly be life-changing and transformative.